This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. When asked why he ventured into botanical research, world-renowned architect and urban designer Dato' Sri Lim Chong Kiat simply responded that, "I did not know enough. I had to repair my ignorance." He has since travelled across Malaysia and around the region for his botanical research and has his own private research garden called Suriana Botanic Conservation Gardens in Balik Pulau in Penang. He joins me now to discuss his decades of work in preserving and nurturing our local flora. Welcome, Dato' Sri. How are you today?
Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. You came all the way from Penang for this, and we really appreciate that. So as I mentioned, you are a Penang native, but I understand you trained in the University of Manchester and at Massachusetts Institute of Technology. What got you interested in architecture and urban design?
Well, the inspiration of looking at contemporary buildings and the desire to create buildings for the environment. I think I was motivated at the age of 7. And, of course, we were in the formative years prior to the Merdeka. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we were lucky in our education, Penang Free School being my springboard. And I was actually also 1 year in the pioneer year of the University of Malaya in Singapore before I went into architecture. I had a year to kill doing pure science, which was actually very useful because it broadened my educational base. And, of course, we were all motivated to reach global standards in education so that we could be of use at home.
And, you know, you said before that, you know, your whole background has been polymathic and that your comprehensivist mindset made you take into consideration things like the environment, for example, history, culture, sociology, among many other things. Who or what inspired you to be a polymath?
I think school. I think for people to broaden their education, we also belong to the period where the education wasn't streamed, you know. There wasn't a clear division between arts and science, so I straddled both. Mm-hmm. And we were encouraged to learn as much as we can.
So let's talk about botany. There was biodiversity. You know, it's being reduced at an accelerating rate without regards to its actual use and its potential that it holds. And plants provide the basis for all terrestrial ecosystems and their fundamental requirement in the maintenance of ecosystem services on which our survival pretty much depends. But, you know, plants are not quite as iconic as wildlife, for example. Do you think this has resulted in less public interest in the conservation of plants?
Well, I would disagree. It's just ignorance. Actually, the first thing is that you have to kindle your curiosity about nature in all its forms, you know, and get down to the reality. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was very interested in birds. We started off by having a very interesting collection of birds in my place in Bellevue. But I could never be good at bird watching because they were a bit fugitive. And so I turned to plants, which are even more iconic and they don't run away. But just watching birds and recording them is a fine hobby, but it doesn't even tell you enough. So let's ask the bird watchers, how much do they know about the breeding of local birds? For example, hornbills. Everybody cites hornbills. But to this date, I'm not sure we have an expert, as say the guys and that wonderful lady in Thailand who's an expert. Mm-hmm. So, but of course, you need a huge amount of patience, and I take my hat off to the people in fauna, especially those who get close to tigers and so on. But I rather look at plants, although sometimes we were scared off by the sound of tigers. But we, you know, I never saw them. I did see elephants a bit close, but prefer them to move away before we look at plants.
Do you think people actually fully grasp, you know, plants' great economic and cultural importance and potential, you know, in providing things like food, medicine, clothing, shelter, you know, for a vast number of people across the world?
Well, of course, the utility of plants is a whole ethnobiology business, you know, and is very important. But my take is that we should firstly know plants as heritage for their own sake. And I used to meet people who said, oh, why are you looking at these plants? What use are they? Now, the commercial attitude actually can encroach into your learning curve. So you should start off by saying, why is it you do not know your own native plants by name and preferably by scientific name? Because there's a reason for a scientific codification. But the sad thing, one seems to observe, there's not enough encouragement. You know, and I used to lecture on the reasons for ignorance. There's not enough encouragement, facilities to learn, and maybe the teachers themselves don't know enough.
So your parents, obviously, they were very encouraging. They, I suppose, put you on the path that you're actually on right now.
Well, my father was, he was a doctor. He was very interested in, in fact, he even did marry stemming of orchids and photographed them. And we used to grow special imported plants in the home. And in fact, the other connection was that Holtum was a friend of my father's. He used to come to the house.
Oh.
And used to take even plants for the Penang Botanic Garden from our garden. So we could learn names like Lagostromia and so on, you know, and slowly learn how to spell. Of course, learning Latin in school helps.
Something that, you know, it's not happening anymore, so.
I don't see why it shouldn't happen, because the idea that you should specialize and only learn one thing, I think, is the great impediment.
I'm speaking today to Datuk Sri Lim Chong Kiat. He is an architect and urban designer. He is also a field botanist. We're actually discussing how we can nurture native flora and the challenges, and we're going to discuss the challenges for Malaysian botanical research and conservation. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, PFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julie Jacobs. In the studio with me today is renowned architect and urban designer Datuk Sri Lim Chong Kiat, and he's also a field botanist, and we are discussing nurturing native flora and also the challenges for Malaysian botanical research and conservation. So, Datuk Sri, is there a comprehensive documentation resource on the world's plant species, kind of like as a baseline to guide conservation efforts and for plant resource planning and management? Is that like in existence somewhere in the world?
Sure, there are a lot of international checklists done by a lot of people, essentially from the West. But from my own experience, they fall short. And the key need in our own country is to build up our own checklist. Mm-hmm. You see, even like the red data list is in a sense based on secondhand material.
Right.
The challenge remains, you know, as you may have gathered, in my case, I actually go in the field and in the process, I've discovered many new species. And how do you do that? And people ask me, how do you know it's a new species? So I usually say, well, think it out. And in fact, one day, a visiting professor of architecture, listening to these questions, said to my inquisitors, the answer is obvious. Nobody can tell it's a new species unless you know all the old ones. But it takes some doing knowing the old ones, especially if the reference books are wrong. So even the famous books by Holtum Ridley have errors. In fact, my research translates into publication to correct these errors. And we have a great need for more people doing this. You know, you may have guessed that I went into botany by default. You know, it's easy for anybody to say, let's wait for some expert to work it out, then we just follow them. But our references are meager. And the standard references, in fact, even the international ones going back to Linnaeus are full of errors. So we have to start to establish the baseline for our own data. And there's a huge amount of work still to be done before we even talk about conservation. And even the search for accurate literature and sieving it. We need readers. We need people not just teaching in universities. We need the researchers to delve through information, check it from the reality. And in my case, I took the very fortunate route. I never believe what I read unless I see the plant in the wild.
So you are no stranger to controversy. I mean, your research into
controversy? What's that word?
I know you did some research into our local bananas, and you know presented evidence about the aspects of propagation that kind of went against the grain. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Yeah, actually moving into Musaceae, the banana family, was a very interesting accident because I met really one of the world's leading amateurs who also did not have paper qualifications. Mm-hmm. See, we divert a bit because people think that unless you have some superior qualification, you're qualified. But that doesn't work because, for example, in orchids, most of the key writers and orchidists are amateurs. Mm-hmm. They were doctors doing it in their spare time. So this emphasis on qualification is not really correct. Anyway, when I started looking at bananas, again, to repair my ignorance, we did enough survey to identify which were the true native bananas in Malaysia, starting off the peninsula. And my collaborator from Sarawak, Kalumikyong, was a very active person in UNIMAS, has been doing the Bornean ones. So between us, we set about to codify the true Malaysian species. Mm-hmm. In the process, we found a new species, which we published in my journal called Folia Malaysiana. But if you read the standard literature, it has been asserted that bananas have been pollinated by birds and bees and insects and all that kind of thing.
Right.
But we found from the field that this is evidently not so, because the female flowers fructify even before the male flowers appear, and even when they're in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's enough field evidence for what is called apomixis, the ability to reproduce without pollination. This obviously contradicts all the written stuff around the world that bananas need to be pollinated. Now, anyway, big outcry, you know, they said if there are no more bees and bats, our bananas all die. That's bunkum. Now, in the process, we have to learn, and I hope the public learns, the difference between the edible banana as against the native banana, which it propagates by seeds as well as by suckers.
Mm-hmm.
The edible bananas are called cultivars. But how they evolved is still a mystery and a really wonderful subject for several PhDs. And I wish I had be in a position to have people researching on this, because the world information about the evolution of edible bananas is, in my opinion, also erroneous. They have claimed that the edible bananas, like pisang mas and so on, come from two basic species called A and B, which were supposed to come from Ambon. And they tried to codify, you know, like the edible banana, the pisang mas, they call AA and so on, you know. Well, that theory, nobody is able to prove. And it was a hypothesis by a guy called Simmons. And they were the British researchers in Trinidad in the School of Agriculture, College of Agriculture. And this is what I have shown to be questionable and, in fact, wrong, because from fieldwork in Ambon itself, I found that the B doesn't exist and is wrong taxonomically and botanically. In fact, it was based on a cultivar. Oh. And this error dates back to Linnaeus, who made the error. But you might find it very interesting to note, if you look into historical literature, that we are taking for granted work done by what I call second-hand botanists who've never seen the plants in their life, like Linnaeus. They work from illustrations and hearsay. So the guy who determined A and B, A being Musa acuminata, B being Musa balbisiana, were written by a guy called Colla in Turin in 1820. And he based it on drawings done 150 years earlier by a German guy called Rumphius in Ambon. He'd never seen the plant. And so the historical mistake has led to this current worldwide acceptance that cultivars come from A and B. And I've written about this and talked in international conference. And I'm waiting to be challenged, because in science, there's no shame if I prove wrong. But I don't get any response, which suggests a very strange affair in the world of botanical science. And of course, from exposure to the scene internationally, we know that people are so preoccupied in their narrow area that they feel they cannot divert into another area.
Mm-hmm.
And this applies locally as well. And science should be much more broad-ranging. And so even assertions by an amateur has to be challenged. So if you check the literature, you'll find a lot of, in fact, false information about this. So I stand by that. And it was a very accidental observation. But it brings to bear the necessity of knowing nature firsthand by observation. And natural sciences should be taught in school.
And you've been fortunate enough to go in situ and, you know, to be able to go and to all these different places and research. Maybe you could tell us some of the places that you have actually gone to conduct your research.
I started from fieldwork. In the case of palms, again, it was necessary for me to see them live in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually we grow them and see how from small to big, you learn the whole cycle of life, what they call phenology. Now, the next stage before you can describe and learn to write, and that's why I published a journal called Folia Malaysiana, where all these species, you know, I've published about 75 new species of palms and gingers, including four new genera genera being like a tribe.
Yeah.
Kind of important.
And very important.
As it happens, I named them after the states of Malaysia. There's a genus named after Kedah, Johor, and Perak. But I don't get any response from people who don't seem to either read the journal or even have heard of it. Doesn't excite them. So this, again, the slightly dead reception for, shall we say, scientific discovery. Mm-hmm. Now, the other necessary thing is that you have to master the literature to know whether the information in the books are right or wrong. That's the reason why I found the errors in Holtom. There's no disrespect to him because he knew me. In fact, we met him before he died. Okay. And he would have appreciated, like any scientist, the correction of his information, as I myself have found necessary to correct my own, or where I'm corrected by others, that's fine, by information, data. But the next thing is a thing called the herbarium. The traditional way of describing new species is to lodge what is called a type specimen and a duplicate type called an isotype and so on in a reputable herbarium like Kew, but we also have Singapore, Calcutta are the ones most important for us, mm-hmm. and Florence. So I made it my business, and of course at personal sacrifice of other expenses, to visit these herbariums and look at the actual types to see whether they truly corresponded with the living material.
Sure.
Now, this is a necessary step. But the other shortfall, which calls for government intervention and more support for students of botany, is to facilitate them to visit the key herbaria. I've met botany students who are not encouraged or unable to visit even Singapore, which contains most of our types. Our national herbaria are not adequate. To learn about palms, for example, and gingers, you must be able to know the collections in Singapore, Calcutta, London, Kew, Florence, Leiden, and so on. Mm-hmm. And I did my own personal sacrifices in equipping myself to do that. And it's available, and the universities must get more grants for this, for their students. By comparison, Thailand endows the students much better. And once when I was in Kew, there were 16 students from Thailand, but I've never heard of any Malaysian students going. Some teachers might be able to go later. So we are falling far behind in botanical knowledge. And this is a serious thing that has to be repaired, apart from the question of in-situ conservation. And sad to say, and this is a constructive comment, of course I may not know the problems of whoever is in charge, but the fact is that the majority of our Utan Lipo are in a very sad state of repair. And when I used to take part in expeditions, you know, I used to be the chairman of FRIM, I'd already recommended that the only way of upgrading them, because they're like mini botanic gardens, you must get regular curators mm-hmm. in charge, not somebody who's transferred overnight. You must have somebody with pride of place there. And this can be done. Of course, it also applies to the national parks.
For sure.
You know, but herein lies an invidious comment, which has to be taken in the right spirit, that the parks in Peninsular Malaysia are sad compared to the ones in Sabah and Sarawak. I hope I don't get pilloried for this, but really it needs, because here is the real heritage, a botanical heritage of the country, and it is being neglected for whatever reason.
So what would you say is being done right in Sabah and Sarawak? How are they doing it right?
They appear to have better trained staff. The conditions are better. Maybe their budgets are better. But mm-hmm. I think it goes back to, as I suspect, if you don't appoint the rangers and put them in charge, mm-hmm. if they're transferable, then you're not going to get continuity or love of that place. Of course, some crowds I've never been back to, but if you take, say, Kuba in Sarawak, which is Gunung Matang,
yeah.
is in pretty good condition on my last visit. And, of course, you have Denham Valley, Imbak, and so on, and Pawau in Sabah, which was in very fine condition.
You mentioned Folia Malaysiana, the botanical publication that you do. Do you think it's, I mean, you mentioned, you know, great personal expense to do all of this. You know, do you think it's been worth it?
Of course. It actually began in a very funny way, largely because we found the... I used to publish, by the way, even in international journals like Principe's International Palm Journal and even the Singapore Gardens Bulletin. So I took the plunge with the help of some advisors, botanical advisors at that, to make the first publication in year 2000, which was a 16-page first issue, a collector's item now, produced in 4 days.
Wow.
Which I then, at first we wanted to do it electronically, which was then in the infancy of being recognized, but I decided after advice to print it out. And in that one, I published a new species of ginger, as well as a new variety, and working on the group called Edlingera. So you have to concentrate on that. So I think it's a germinal issue that should be looked at. But I'm glad I did it because from that, we have now consistently published it up to the current year. And of course, people at first said it would die a natural death. But this is a magazine which has published not only my own discoveries, but we've been helping young botanists, not only from Malaysia, but also from the region. So it's an important journal, and it's carried by the major herbaria. We exchange with them. Major libraries around the world. Sad to say, not carried enough by local universities. And the, you see, the style of this journal, we actually are very lavish of photographs because we believe that visual information tells you the thousand-word kind of thing, you know. But we immediately found resistance amongst lay readers, even members of the Nature Society and other related institutions. They said it's too difficult to read, but I sense in the case of some of them, they never even tried. So this bespeaks a certain lethargy in learning that is widespread. There's no encouragement. So that tells you something. So I think constructively, a program of induction and knowledge, you know, on natural sciences, in this case on natural flora, should be launched and supported. And what we're trying to do in our conservation garden, of course, is firstly to provide living specimens for research. And we have many, many research students using our facilities for their work, some for DNA and all that. But the future relies, depends on really having supporters to carry and provide the continuity. And the sharing amongst institutions is certainly important because the sad thing is that researchers are too narrowly focused in the area. Maybe they're too busy to find time to share. But Malaysia has a great potential. Despite, you see, the thing when I started, a lot of people say, why are you bothering? Firstly, there's no money in it.
Yeah.
And you cannot use it. And it should all have been written by Holtham and Ridley and so on. They assume that the colonials have done it all for us. How wrong they are. If you do not know your own species before you even talk of using it, you are falling short in terms of our national culture.
Do you think, you know, something like the implementation of a Malaysian national strategy for plant conservation, for example, would that be something that takes us in the right direction?
Here, I may be on slippery ground because I do not know. Ever since I was chairman only up to 2004, I'm not sure how the ministry is equipped in terms of manpower. The quality of any program depends on the implementers and the researchers and their network. I can say, however, that a program called MyBIS, which is Malaysian Botanical Information System, which grew from a thing called the Clearinghouse Mechanism set up by FRIM, has been launched, but it has many, many flaws in it. And I suspect manpower shortage. Now, it's no use, like these international journals, just publishing a checklist from secondhand material. If you don't verify and get up to date, it may necessitate you reading Folia Malaysiana. Apart from buying it, you can borrow it. You have the latest cutting-edge information. You really need dedicated teams, and they should correlate. And I mean, for example, I would be very happy to help them if they were to invite me, and we must have a critical examination how accurate the information is.
And you know, your own garden, Suriana Botanic Gardens in Penang, is that open to everybody as well, or is that mostly for
researchers? It is a private garden, and we are not geared to have all and sundry walk in, but we are happy to receive researchers and so on. And I've been helping, really open to students and so on. The reason we have to keep it fairly clandestine is the danger of theft.
As you just mentioned.
I can't even afford to fence the thing in, you know. But the greater challenge, which we are still engaged in, is to still monitor and do discrete collection from the wild. Mm-hmm. And here I'm assisted, and this is one of the projects I'm also involved with, I'm helping a cooperative of Tamiya people, which you call Adana. And they're part of my collectors, they're workers, and they are pretty good parabotanists. So, in fact, if I name my key Tamiya collector, he will be able to tell you where are most of the rare species in the country, where they are, more than many of the desktop so-called professional botanists. And I have to tell you a funny story. One day, a new species was collected somewhere, so I asked the botanist in charge, how can I find my way to look for it? He says, oh, I don't know. You have to ask the driver. So the geographical knowledge of the country is very important. And as long as I still have the energy, we are actually repeating trips over and over again to recheck. And in the process, we see, of course, the decimation, the loss of forest cover and so on. However, we should not be defeatist. And my standard answer to international people talking about our forests being diminished, I said, if you think that there's so little left, there's a lot more than you think. But of course, if you think there's a lot left, there's less. But there is a race going on.
For sure.
But the real race is actually knowledge. You cannot expect the foresters or the commercialists to protect the natural flora if they don't know what is rare. And don't talk about what use it is. In terms of use, in terms of the phytochemistry, the potential is actually huge. And we're also short in terms of research facilities on DNA work and genetic studies and so on. Mm-hmm. But before you go that way, it's just you have the things in your backyard. You must know what it looks like in reality and see how to cultivate it. And there's horticultural potential from growing these things. So we need to really encourage really new hordes of dedicated people interested in their natural flora.
And Merdeka is just around the corner. You've spoken before about architecture as being a tool for nation building. How would you also, say the same for botany?
I didn't call it a tool. I think that, in fact, it's relevant to talk in terms of Merdeka. We were automatically interested in using education at a global level to be able to contribute to the development of sensible buildings in our own country. Mm-hmm. Whether they last, whether some of them get defaced, you can't be helped. But in that field, there's also a serious deterioration. There are too many commercial buildings which are spoiling the environment. That's not the subject for this area. But in terms of botany, it is essential that we should catalogue and know all of living specimens. In fact, that's what I'm trying to do across the range of the ginger group. Mm-hmm. We've done it for bananas. We know all of them. But in certain groups, accessibility is a problem. One of the rare alpinias we were trying to find, we made 3 expeditions. We were scared off by the noise of some growling Maybank animal. They call it Maybank.
I guess then, you know, what would your message be for everyone this Merdeka Day?
Be proud of your national flora. And to be proud, you've got to know what they are.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking today to Datuk Sri Lim Chong Kiat. He is an architect and urban designer, and he's also an amateur field botanist. And we've been discussing nurturing native flora and the challenges for Malaysian botanical research and conservation. You've been listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.